You there! You're a listener and also a watcher, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to point. In fact, point at you. Welcome to episode 38 of ComposerCast. My name is Lloyd Tranter.
And my name is Will Hilliwell.
He's got the idea now. I point at him and he talks.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. This episode, which was a great one. They're all great, but it feels like you have to say that at the beginning, don't it? We interviewed Evan Rogers, and he was lovely and brilliant. And he felt a little bit too important to be on this podcast, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, we were just going to do... This was going to be like a quick 10-minute sort of little snippet inside the main episode. And then we started talking to him. And so Evan is an orchestrator and arranger.
What's an orchestrator?
Somebody who...
Don't answer that! Find out in the episode!
There you go.
See?
Got it, yeah.
Teasers.
But we started talking to him, and it was going to be like a little 10-minute chat, and then it went into like a 40-minute chat, and he was a really nice guy, and loads of interesting stuff to say, so we decided to make this a full episode.
So have a sit back, relax, and have a listen to Evan Rogers on ComposerCast episode 38. Well, yeah, let's should we just talk about that straight away? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, could do.
Yeah,
cool.
I heard about you because you shared you were doing this big project, and then you released it, and it was this tutorial about arranging for big band.
Yeah. What did it come out? A little over a week now. Feels like 8 months. but yeah, it was in production for a really long time, and it just kind of grew and grew. And it just ended up being over 55,000 words and tons of audio examples with a lot of very expensive, very good session players.
Wow.
And yeah, I think I did have a bit of a trawl kind of after I did it. And I think it's now the biggest thing out there, definitely for free. But I think maybe even it just tops out the other biggest book by a couple thousand words. But so, yeah.
That's amazing.
Awesome.
And you've done it for free.
Yeah, all for free. I mean, that's the kind of thing I get most. Why did you do it for free? Are you mad? Are you lonely?
All of the above.
Yeah, or everything, really. No, it started out being free because really it was just a bunch of, it was just a lot of ideas and thoughts I had that I kind of had collected over the time from doing this kind of thing in the studios. And as I say in the intro, kind of, I had this absolutely tragic first experience where I had loads of really, really good expensive players and a big budget, and it didn't go great. I mean, I don't think anyone noticed, but I think it was I did, and I think the players did. So then I was like, oh, I should probably start making notes on how not to do that again.
Yeah.
And it just turned out to be a friend kind of read through them and said, oh, you should probably make some of these as like little tips available. So I was just going to release them on Twitter to begin with, just as kind of really small little tips. And as they got bigger, I then kind of organized it more into, and it just kind of ended up being way more formal than I originally anticipated as well, which is cool because I think the format as well is just, the word ebook is a bit, it puts it in a certain space, doesn't it?
Yeah, when I think of ebooks, they come across as a bit spammy, like, oh, enter your email here and then you'll get a free ebook.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all a bit, this is kind of the thing I'm going to use to hook you in for a bigger thing later, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which it really wasn't intended to be that at all. So I kind of kept it as this kind of informal blog thing, but it's kind of a bit more formal than a blog, but less formal than an ebook, I guess. But it also means that I can update it and chuck in audio examples and do all that sort of stuff that an ebook, it would be a bit harder to do if people are downloading PDFs and EPUB documents and stuff. So I'm kind of happy with how it ended up. And because I never thought about charging to begin with, it kind of didn't really, thought later, I was like, oh, well, actually, this is turning out to be a lot. Maybe I should. But then I realized that I'd kind of be doing it for the sake of it. I mean, I don't really make my money as an educational content provider, much to the relief of many people, because I'd be telling everyone to do bad habits. But I think I don't really see myself as making money that way anyway. So maybe in the future with more content, it'll be kind of a more donation Patreon kind of model without,
yeah,
or without anything behind paywalls. There's just so much in jazz arranging as well. I don't know. When I went looking for all these kind of documents and everything, there's a big bunch of hype built up around kind of certain, should we say, establishments that have kind of put out a lot of material, and they've kind of patented almost their own methods, which are just kind of simple things, flowery and built up, and kind of, they're not really that practical, but they charge a lot of money for them. And it was kind of stressful to pay this money thinking, oh, I'm going to learn this. This is going to be great. Go to my next game gig, write a big, I'm going to do a big Cuphead soundtrack. And then you end up sounding not like that. So yeah, it was kind of just, it came about by accident, as a lot of these things do. And yeah, I'm pretty happy with keeping it as a blog and keeping it free, really.
That's cool.
Awesome. So yeah, how do you make money through your music?
So I work predominantly as an orchestrator for other composers. I do a bit of my own composing, and I have done a lot more, but I've kind of transitioned away from that. And I work on mainly games. So when things are about to go to the studio, they're booked a bunch of live players and they need that taking out of Logic, Cubase, whatever. I do all the scores and parts and stuff ready for the orchestra. And then I turn up at the session as well and help make sure that everything isn't going to be catastrophic when it goes into the final game.
Okay, cool. And yeah, I saw that you made some tracks for trailers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So I started out actually as a trailer composer, I guess, more than anything else. That was kind of my foot in the door, really. So I did, oh wow, back in early 2015, I guess, was Heroes of the Storm by Blizzard. And then I did in late 2015 Battlefield 1. And I've done a couple of other things here and there, but I work with the kind of big trailer houses. And that's also okay. Kind of how I got in with the composers, really, who then said, oh, look, we need our stuff orchestrating and we don't really have anyone to do it. Do you want to kind of be involved in that way? Which I did. It's a lot more, should we say, stable, I guess, than composing, orchestrating is.
Yeah.
Which is a blessing. Everyone will be like, oh, wow, it's... everyone will want to be an orchestrator then, because it's
is it because there's so few of them?
Yeah, I think to be honest, no one wants to do it. I think that's what it is. I mean, you've got to kind of have a certain temperament, I think, to want to sit there with other people's music and work on it as hard as you work on your own. I think a lot of people do it because it's well protected union wise as well. Like, it's just financially, there's so much more regulations. Like, oh, we pay this person X amount per minute, as opposed to a composer where you've got to do all your own stuff and figure that out per project. It's a lot more, and as we kind of all know as creatives, that's kind of not what we want to do a lot of the time. So yeah. I think it's a lot more appealing from that point of view. But yeah, I think not many people really want to do it. A lot of people can, and a lot of composers I know do their own. But I think kind of to do it, just to have someone else take over that bit of responsibility while they can focus on the next bit or the next track that needs writing. I think they value that more than having a total say, if you know what I mean, in the recording session.
Yeah. So when it comes with someone, like if I was to come to you and say, could you orchestrate this for me, please? Like, how much of the, what am I trying to say? What would I give you in terms of music wise? Like, say I've written a big piece, how Would you add more instruments to it, or how would you go about doing it?
So it's a good question, because it changes like on every single job, really.
Right.
So some jobs I get the MIDI fully realized. So the composer will have composed everything in absolute detail, and it's pretty much just my job to take that MIDI and translate it for the instruments to play properly.
Okay. Yeah.
So I listen to the demo over and over again and make sure it's going to kind of match in terms of dynamics and everything. So the composer's not going to get to the session and be surprised and be like, what have you done? What have you done? And also that kind of cue and that track has often been approved by an audio director in games, the game director maybe, or the director in a film, and you can't really go and change it. So that's quite important to just take what you're given in MIDI usually and make a good job. Another way is sometimes, and I mean very, very rarely, I can probably count on one hand in the past year, is you get like a piano sketch or a voice note or something.
Right.
Like something really sparse. Yeah. And that's usually, it's not at all the composer's kind of fault. It's just the time pressure that everyone's working under. There was one gig that I did back in December on a game that's due to come out end of this year. So I can't talk about which it is, but the composer was under such mad amounts of pressure that we were literally maybe 3 hours before going to the recording studio. And there was about a 5 minute track that still hadn't been written. It was just because it had been changed that many times in the cutscene it was in. The cutscene had changed so much. And so, yeah, I think he ended up singing about 4 or 5 different parts down a voice note at me. And we kind of fashioned something out of it, got to the session, made quite a few changes. And eventually, I think the audio director was happy with it. But so that's really rare. And then finally, kind of, if it's not MIDI and it's not that or an audio file or something, it's kind of like halfway between. So it might be, oh, well, here's all the strings. Can you just, the orchestra is also for brass and woodwinds as well. So here, do all the strings as you normally would, and then chuck in loads of other stuff as well. That's quite common, but just again, because of time usually. And if the composer trusts you, then they know that you're going to kind of go for the right vibe and not totally ruin everything. So you do quite a bit of composing in it, depending on the job.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is knowing, like, if I'm trying to write a track, especially for an orchestra, it would be knowing exactly what an orchestra can do. Like, oh no, string players, they can't play that fast. What are you doing to them? Yeah. Like, to have someone tell me that would be amazing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That it's often that kind of other safety net, because when you're composing, sometimes you don't want to, and I'm the same when I'm composing, even though I'm an orchestrator, you don't want to be thinking about these technical limitations because you want to be in a creative mindset.
Yeah.
So you want to be sat there thinking, this harmony, this chord progression is cool, this kind of, this sound great on a trumpet. And then having another layer of someone turning around and going, oh, I get what you're going for, but should we try it on this instead? That's a lot of the job, really. With some composers, it's very much a collaborative process, which they really enjoy, where you give them feedback and they kind of respect that you end up working with an orchestra a lot. I mean, especially on games. I mean, with a composer, if they've been on a game for 2 or 3 years, they can maybe have, let's say, a 6-week recording session at the end of that game. And we often go back into the studio and do a bit more on bigger games, on AAAs and stuff. But they're probably in the studio for 8 weeks out of 52 a year, and over the course of a project that might only be once in 3 years, whereas kind of as an orchestrator you're in there maybe 2-3 times a week. So you just kind of, you're so much more exposed to that. A lot of composers really like just the advice and making things run smoothly, and a lot of producers like that too, game producers and film producers, because you're the one often who, If the orchestra reads through it first time or third time or fifth time, that's usually the orchestrator's doing, both negatively and positively. it's never really the composer at that point. If the composer writes something and it's kind of slipped through the orchestrator, then it's kind of the orchestrator's fault. So it's all about kind of time management and I guess it's like creative interpretation, really.
Yeah. So you're the one saving them budget.
That's the thing that they, well, composers see you kind of saving time, someone who saves time, and producers see you as the budget one, really, especially on games, because we have so many different layers to record. And when all the music works interactively as well, like, we'll have to record all the strings, then all the brass, then all the winds and stuff, often in tons of different layers. And it's about kind of managing an order for all of that. When I was first starting out for some of the Battlefield stuff, one of my first ever sessions, we were doing, taking it all separately, and we got the horns to do all their stuff kind of in the middle, really. So we did all the strings, did some winds, then did the horns. And there was just so much high, difficult stuff for them that we just kept on asking them to do over and over and over again until the 10th take, when we got back in the studio, sounded really, really bad. We had to go back in and redo it. And that was totally an oversight on my part, because I hadn't predicted that we need to give them a lot of rest so that we're going to get a good, clean take every time. So, yeah, audio directors and stuff, they love it if you can be a bit budget conscious, so the composer doesn't have to be, so they can just focus on the music.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
How did you, with the big band, so thing, the big tutorial thing that you've made, is big band your main thing? Why did you go down that route?
Not really. I mean, I kind of fell into it, really, because I kind of got a gig that was absolutely by fluke. You know how when everyone says put up a website but no one's really going to look at it, and,
yeah,
you, like that, someone actually found my website, even though, like, it was brand new, and it was total fluke. And someone said, oh look, we're putting together a bit of a team, can you be the t-boy, basically, this team? And it was like one of those really cliche things where you get there and then the main guy's not around anymore, because he went on to a better gig, so then you kind of quickly have to fill in or whatever in the studio.
Everyone shifts up one place.
Yeah. It's like that really cliche, like you jump onto the conductor's podium and absolutely say, hey, shit.
Yeah. You solved, so there was a riddle, a composing riddle on a blackboard, and you solved it.
My way.
Wait a minute, this brass could sit here and we could have the flutes play this. No, exactly. One's ever done that before.
Yeah, there was this trial that I had to go through. Yeah. It was not as exciting as that. And it was just I filled in for that, and the job was just arranging some strings for some songs in what happened to be a Disney show at the time, but it was in development and it was going to be pitched for Disney Plus, which was still a few years kind of in the pipeline at that point, because this is like 2017 or something. And then what happened was the show took a big turn into kind of the 50s, and then it became all very big band oriented. And I'd done a little bit before, like the odd arrangement here and there, but nothing serious. And then I was working on it for maybe 6 months with a big band in the studio, maybe 3-4 days a week. So I learned pretty fast kind of what sounded terrible. Actually, I learned a lot about what I wrote it. A lot that I wrote was terrible for a very long time. Until you go to the pub with the players and you start talking to them, and you watch a few videos, you read a few books, read a few blogs, and then you start piecing this mental picture together of what you're doing that's so terrible, and then it gets less terrible, hopefully, which is kind of where it's left off. And I'm still doing work with the same production company, doing all their big band arranging and stuff, and helped out on some of the bigger products like Cats and stuff that show we shall not speak about. And stuff like that. And I wasn't really involved, but it was just more like score supervision on the big band. So they'll send through scores and you check through parts and voicings and do consulting almost.
Okay, cool. So, yeah. Do you do a lot of work from home?
Yeah. Unless I'm in the studio, I only ever work.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't have it any other way.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could. Bloody work from home. I'm always interested in what people listen to in their spare time, because obviously you're a composer you're an orchestrator and composer that that does big band stuff. What sort of stuff do you listen to in your free time? Like,
yeah, I mean, when I'm not, it's really hard because I have to purposely carve out time for listening to music, because when you're kind of working on it all day, you can become a bit like, oh,
ear fatigue.
And so usually I'll be listening to whatever I'm working on for a project. So the past week I've been doing this weird, it's like old school 50s big band kind of set for when we're out of lockdown. And and so all I've been listening to is kind of stuff I don't really like, but is good to listen, like Sinatra and stuff like that, or the kind of Dean Martin. So I wouldn't choose to listen to that. So basically I split my listening time up into stuff that I'm listening to for a job, and stuff that I generally like listening to. So yeah. The stuff I generally like listening to at the moment, I mean, I listen to a lot of big band stuff, like modern big band. So Gordon Goodwin's Big Fat Band are like wicked, but like just really good tight groove and funk and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then I listen to a lot of kind of bands from my kind of earlier days, and kind of a lot of the, I listen to a lot of kind of really, I like kind of a lot of, I guess it's prog metal, I don't know, Monuments and stuff like that.
Math rock sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Kind
of thing.
Because I think a lot of people who have that jazz influence, and then that when they were younger, they listened to band sort of stuff. That math rock kind of sits perfectly in the middle of that, doesn't it? Where you've got all the time signature stuff, and then, you know, it's also got these really pretty melodies and stuff. And yeah, so like Snarky Puppy and that sort of stuff.
I like Snarky Puppy and kind of all the kind of offshoots of Snarky Puppy, like Corey Henry's kind of stuff, I really like, and everything like that. Yeah, I think
Wolf Peck. How do you I'm also interested in how do you listen to your music? Do you use a streaming service, or are you a bit poncy where you need to download everything poncy. And have it in FLAC and like no, it must be at the highest resolution.
I tried to, but I got really bored with managing it all, to be honest.
It's exactly the problem I fell into.
There's nothing good that kind of, I mean, I'm sure there are, I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to like just like organizational systems that like Asana, Trello, all those kind of things.
See, I told you it's normal.
He said geeky, William. He said geeky.
I love all that kind of stuff. And like, I just wish there was one for that kind of high quality where you can kind of almost like, I know Apple Music kind of has that, but it's more streamy, but it kind of doesn't look it. But I just use Spotify really.
I thought Bandcamp kind of fit that sort of role. I felt like Bandcamp did a pretty good job, and it also did well with the sort of nichier bands that I like, you know, the really small time that are like from your local area.
They
had a good, like Bandcamp was pretty good, but
I use Bandcamp a lot for the kind of, I listen to a lot of kind of small West Coast like post-hardcore-y bands. I mean, like really post because post-hardcore was like 2008, but like but yeah, so I really like it for that kind of thing. The other thing is I listen, just by nature of doing all, I listen to a lot of classical music as well, and the problem is on all those kind of sites the metadata for classical music is kind of terrible. I mean, let's say you've got a band like one of my favorite bands, like Hail the Sun. That song written by Hail the Sun is going to be written by Hail the Sun and played by Hail the Sun, and that's it, kind of thing.
I get what you mean. Yeah. So if you're listening to classical music, it's composed by Mozart, but then it's played by someone who might completely ruin it.
Yeah. Played by 10 different orchestras, and it's like each one is kind of cool to listen to depending on what kind of mood you're in. And filing that and messing about with that is just stressful. So I just
you know what, you could arrange your own versions of all of this stuff as a little project for yourself. Just get all your favorite versions of classical songs, get them all together, get one person to compose, you know, to perform it all.
I could, and it's people have tried to do that as well. I don't know, it's just they've kind of got like Spotify alternatives as well.
There's a classical one specifically, isn't there?
Yeah. I tried it for a bit, and it was just, I ended up, because I have Apple Music and Spotify, and I was like, I worked out, I was paying like 50 quid a month for streaming services.
Wow.
Do I really need to do this? Like, for the amount of music that I listen to in a day, I don't listen to music that much. I have to put it as time aside to enjoy it. So I'm not.
Yeah, same.
It.
Yeah.
And like, I'm in London now and I don't drive anymore. So I used to listen in the car, like kind of most people, but I just don't.
I was about to say that most of my music listening happens on my commute now.
Right.
Like, over lockdown, I barely listened to any music. There are a few bands that released albums that I listened to, but then when I started going back to work, I was like, oh yeah, I listen to music in the car, don't I? That's when I listen to my music.
Like 10 albums in lockdown.
Yeah. And then you can sing along as well. That's the other good thing about a car journey. Like belting out all the songs.
I do it on the tube.
Exactly. Yeah. Just like, what the hell?
Exactly. I mean, I've been really lucky to work with some of the bands I really, really like. The I did a lot of the times when bands do orchestral stuff, so like Alter Bridge and Bring Me the Horizon and stuff, they did Royal Albert Hall stuff, and I did the orchestra stuff for them.
And that was great. Yeah. I mean,
that kind of stuff is like, it's brilliant. The thing is, they rarely have the budget or the inclination, to be honest, to take it from MIDI to real bands, which is a shame.
Yeah.
I know a lot of kind of my favorite metal producing stuff would love to. It's just kind of getting the label to agree.
Yeah,
in the pop,
but then that's a pretty big niche for you, isn't it? You know, you've got that crossover of I listen to all this alternative stuff, but then I know how to do all this classical stuff. If they need, you know, if they want to do that sort of project, which a lot of bands have done, haven't they? They've decided to like
and stuff, and all their kind of early orchestral stuff, as in like the live shows they do, and then there's like all the Nightwish kind of genre as well, which kind of they record all that live as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of what I, when I go for drinks with producers and stuff, what I'm kind of saying to them, like, get me in on some live strings and stuff like that. But the truth is, samples sound so good now, and the mixes are just so different in rock and metal that the strings are pushed so far down that if they're real, people can't tell. So
yeah, it's not worth putting all that production value into it when it's going to sit so low in the mix that.
Exactly. I mean,
they
need to do that, spend a week at a studio, pay top London session players to do it all just to have it
very
slightly noticeably better. It's like,
I think there are some, like Metallica probably have the production behind them to do stuff like that. But as you say, small bands wouldn't be able to do that. But it's a shame. Yeah,
if you can find anyone to convince to do it, then definitely.
Okay, cool. When I become a millionaire,
only orchestral versions of all my favorite band albums.
Oh, that would be so good. Oh, you could become the Richard Cheese of classical music.
Definitely.
You got any other questions, Williams?
I think only
just sat. Just sat there with your mustache.
Yeah.
My dog hasn't barked for 20 minutes. It's going well.
I think I've only got one. Is how, obviously, in the lockdown, has that affected you at all? Has it affected your work or personally, of course, as well?
The thing is, I mean, I'm finding a lot of musicians say this that I talk to. I mean, we're all kind of lockdowns, it's just the same kind of thing because we work from home all day, and the main difference is the studio's not being open, which I generally, like I said, go into more so than composers, just because their work cycles are much longer, and so that's been a bit of a bummer. But in terms of actual work, it's kind of surprisingly not really slowed down, because a lot of the production companies and game companies, they're not really that bothered by it, because their release dates are still, I don't know, March 2021. Or a lot of the film production companies I'm finding are going, oh wow, there's going to be a huge lack of content on Netflix in like September or something.
Yeah.
So let's make stuff as much as we can.
I guess people will probably push out more animated stuff because they don't have to meet up to do that. Do you know what I mean? There'll probably be a big influx of animated stuff. I work at a film studio and it all shut down. Literally everything shut down, the whole thing. For like, I only went back to work on June the 1st. Wow. So anything that involved photography and, you know, video, I can imagine has just stopped completely.
So all the pre-stuff, I mean, I'm doing a show at the moment that's in post-production, well, kind of in post, and most of it is. And they're recording a lot of the stuff remotely, as in, because a lot of it, it's got a big soundtrack element, so a lot of singers and stuff. And we're doing a lot of stuff where I'll be doing arrangement things here, and it'll be sent off, and the producer will be using audio movers to record someone over Zoom and stuff. And then the demo vocals coming back, and it's all getting approved and kind of investment that way.
Wow.
So they're still kind of keeping it going. It's like they're kind of fighting tooth and nail to like get it made.
Do you think there's going to be a lot more like home studio sort of stuff popping up? Like everyone will just have a home studio now.
I hope so. I mean, like, it's just, I think a lot of people, I've also kind of noticed, actually, I've had about two or three new clients who are like songwriters who have then now dabbled in orchestral music because of lockdown as well.
Yeah.
So, they're kind of all making plans to record in August, September, which I'm doing orchestrations for. And it's all very, so I'm really interested in the fact that people have kind of gone like, oh, you know what? It's lockdown. I'm going to be inside for a while. Let's see what this sample library does and let's download it. I usually write kind of, I don't know, indie stuff, and I'm going to try my hand at writing a couple orchestral things.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I mean, I don't know when they're actually going to go to record, but I've found that work's been fairly steady, luckily. But I know people in my position who find exactly the opposite. So, and of course, there's no like furlough or anything for self-employed, that kind of thing. But I know a lot of composers are living on their royalty statements and stuff. But wow. That's also rough for game composers as well, because game composers, it's just so much more difficult to get back-end royalties and stuff. So I don't know how they're really being affected, but I don't know. Game development cycles are so much longer that they can probably, they're probably still working on it if their release date wasn't set for this summer. They're probably still quite fortunate.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Ooh. Yeah, mate, it's been a really good chat.
Absolutely.
And thanks, I loved it. Me. No worries. It's been good. And have a good rest of the day and solstice day. Is solstice count as today? Yeah.
Like, I think it was yesterday was the summer solstice. That was the longest day of the year.
Right.
Okay. So now it gets downhill from here.
It's all downhill. Yep.
Well, have a good post-solstice, everyone.
Yeah. Sweet.
Wicked. Cheers, guys.
Cool, man.
All right. Easy. Cool. Catch you later.
Bye. Oh, wasn't that a good laugh?
That bit there.
I didn't mean the episode. I just meant that little laugh there we just expelled.
I enjoyed that laugh. It's good to laugh, isn't it? It's nice.
But
that
episode was great as well.
It was a good episode. I enjoyed the episode. I enjoyed talking to Evan. He is such a lovely guy.
Great taste in music.
Apparently, as you say, yeah.
Yeah.
I let you carry that bit because you guys don't have a taste in music. I have some tastes. It's not to everyone's taste. I like music with a story.
John Mayer. You like John Mayer?
John Mayer, Watzke, and Show of Hands. If I could,
the three bands.
Just listen to them. That would be fine. That would do me. I'm all right.
Your Spotify gets angry at you, I imagine.
Yeah. The algorithm goes, not again. Fuck's sake.
What could he possibly like? Nothing. He just keeps on telling me, no, no, no.
I don't want that.
Well, anyway, if you want to support William's music taste, you can go on Patreon and you can support us. And then you get access to a Discord channel, don't they? And then you can type out angry messages to
William. That is the new thing that we got. So we have a Discord channel now. So you go on Patreon, support us for any money. You get access to the Discord channel. You can chat to us.
Directly. It comes straight to my phone.
We will answer as well. We will say, hello. All right.
Hello. What? Who are you? Why are you listening to this? They'll say, because it's great. That's what you're going to say, William. You're going to go, because it's great.
Yeah, I didn't have that response ready. I was panicking. Like, why? Because it's great. Because it's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got Patreon. Go and support us on there. Rate and review on iTunes or whatever podcast app
you're
using.
Hey, that's actually important. Isn't it now?
Rating and reviewing.
Just even if you're my mate, whoever the hell you are, if you're hearing this right now, it's going straight into your eardrums. It's going through that saddle, that little bone, the other little bone I can't remember the name of, right? Going into your eardrum, travelling all the way to your brain. If that's happening right now, can you please go on iTunes, click ComposerCast, even if you're not listening to this on iTunes, click 5 stars if you think it's 5 stars. If you think it's any less... And then leave a comment. Leave a little comment. Those guys know about music and VR. And William's taste in music is rubbish! In all caps.
There you go. And that will help us out a lot. But follow us on Twitter and Patreon and Instagram as well as the other one that we got. And yeah, we'll post videos and clips and just... talk to us, and anything that you want to suggest for future episodes, let us know.
And thank you for listening. Is this it? Is this podcasting now?
That's always the question. Is this podcasting?